Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
We are the Heavy Heavy. We are in sunny, sunny, not so sunny Brighton. And what do we try to do with our music, Will?
We're trying to bring back the sound of the best records ever.
Yeah.
Dreaming of a place where the sunlight never sleeps. It's a beauty color paradise.
And tell us who each of you are.
So I'm Georgie. And I'm singer and instrumentalist, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm Will. I play guitar and I sing in the band and I record all of the stuff. Yeah.
You know, the tambourine work does not get the appreciation it should, Georgie.
I know, thank you.
Yeah, difficult.
That's what I keep bloody saying to everyone.
You guys have pretty much mastered this very specific sound that has not been heard in a while. You could say it's, you know, what, modern retro music or some version of that. But there's something that you guys are creating in this Life and Life Only EP that, again, feels like we've been dropped into a specific time and place. And it could exist in the middle of the field in Woodstock. It could exist in the middle of the English countryside. But it feels like somewhere we always want to be, you know, like it's an ideal utopian place that sort of reverbed out, dreamy, always feeling like the dream is about to crumble any yeah. moment situation, you know?
That's I mean, Will always says it's just fuel for the imagination. And yeah. That's kind of it, isn't it? Your imagination takes you somewhere dreamlike and you don't want to leave.
Yeah, you know, that amount of reverb, yeah, is fuel for the imagination. It's what takes you on.
Am I on something, or does that guitar just sound that good? Either way, you're tuned in to the show on the road. Thanks for being back with us. I'm your humble host, Zach Lupitan, and this week we take a psychedelic trip across the pond to talk to Will and Georgie about their project, The Heavy Heavy, and their newest record, which I think is one of my most played and enjoyed records of 2022, Life and Life Only. Now, I often pose an idea on this very show that if we could build a time machine, where would we go? Which musical moment would we encounter in person? For me, maybe it would be joining my dad in Bruce Springsteen's van after a sweaty show in New Jersey in his younger years. Or maybe we'd go to the Summer Jam at Watkins Glen, at one time the biggest festival on earth, where the Allman Brothers, the Grateful Dead, and the band joined forces together. But I can't go back in time. But what I can do is listen to what Will Turner has created here. A utopian, reverb-drenched, sun-soaked sound that I wish I could dive into right now. So if you want just a little bit of sweet sonic escape, I suggest you join me and the Heavy Heavy. Here we go. So you record all the stuff yourself?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. And also cost effective.
Yes, that is true. Although the vintage gear is expensive, but we're getting there.
Do you find that you have discovered that you have your own signature reverb plate, or like that the Heavy Heavy uses this certain type of spring that is your sound now?
It's our sound now, and I'm not going to tell anyone what it is.
Special spice.
Yes, yeah, it's a special sauce.
I'll be waiting forevermore. Ba, 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 ba. Paparazzo.
Now, both of you have come from, you know, some different backgrounds. I know, Georgie, you've performed in theater and on TV, and Will, you're composing and doing all this stuff in the background. But how do you guys each bring your backgrounds into this project?
Well, I mean, I think it started with the demos that Will had, and he asked me to lay down some female harmonies, just some harmonies on it, and we suddenly realized that it opened out so many possibilities. And if you look at a track like Sleeping on Grassy Ground, that big kind of astral middle section, kind of inspired by Great Gig in the Sky, is where definitely where my kind of theatrical side comes in, because it allows me to just improv and go blah and see what happens. I definitely say that our two different kind of approaches come into their own in different places. Will's definitely comes into its own in the studio, obviously producing everything. For me, it's more so on stage.
Yeah, it's like the two worlds, and they do combine on the records. I mean, I've spent a long time perfecting the sound of those retro records. That's my entire focus, is not so much recreating it, it's just getting on that level, that kind of atmosphere that was created in those level, those records, whether it's Motown or country records or all the classic rock, you know, it's like getting into that world and working out how it was done, not even from a specific point of view, but just a general atmosphere. And then putting Georgie into that has caused a bit of an explosion of sound, really. And the possibilities are sort of endless, it seems. And quite exciting, because the range of the different vocals we can do is, as you said, it's two worlds combining, which is very exciting, you know, as a producer, to be able to have such a big palette and an exciting world to go into. Yeah, it's cool.
Let's talk about that track, Sleeping on Grassy Ground, for a second. Because Georgie, you really kind of unleash yourself in that track, sort of playing with the guitar like it's
conversation.
Like you're chasing it through a field, like it's a spirit that you're trying to grab a hold of. And it kind of reminded me of like if Florence and the Machine were recording in Laurel Canyon.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
Bloody lovely. Yeah.
Also, when are you guys going to move to LA? Just make the leap. You belong here. This is ridiculous. What are you doing over there?
Dude, it's always been the goal, right?
Yeah, it has been on the cards for a while, so we're getting there.
We're getting there.
Talking.
But there is this conversation between British bands and American bands, almost like talking to each other across the pond.
Yeah.
Mutual obsession, right? Where you had the Beatles talking about how much they were listening to Pet Sounds and the Beach Boys. And the Beach Boys were like, well, we were trying to do what you guys were doing, you know?
It's amazing, isn't it?
And special relationship.
Well, it's a very special relationship. But we kind of feel like over here that the sounds that we love aren't really being pushed so much anymore. They're not at the forefront. Whereas, you know, we feel like America is still really in love with that sound and peddling it. And we were saying to someone a couple of weeks ago, we feel like the British invasion went over and invaded, and we've now got to somehow try and bring the British invasion home, because we don't have it here anymore. Like, it just went and it stayed. And
Well, I've been trying to push on this podcast 100 episodes strong that my favorite groups right now are creating something that maybe could be called the new classic rock. You know, there's like this thing that, at least over here, that still is so strong that dominates the radio, dominates sort of the culture of these set of songs that came out maybe like 64 to like 75, you know, it's just timeless, socially conscious, ballsy awesomeness. And it exists in so many different genres. I mean, we say rock, but you know, you had soul music and funk and folk music that became rock and roll. And I know your album name, Life and Life Only, you know, is sort of definitely teasing out that Bob Dylan reference, Mom Only Bleeding, one of my favorite songs. But again, like you have these timeless groups that then got obliterated by synthesizers and disco and
money.
And then it just disappeared. But people are now bringing that feeling back in a lot of ways. And I think there's a tough balance to walk with a lot of groups like you, because you don't want to be known only as, we're trying to recreate what the Mamas and the Papas did. But you guys are your own people making your own messages. And I think it's about maybe creating a feeling more than trying to ape a certain sound, you know. Again, there's something about that Woodstock idea, people getting together from all different walks of life and creating something beautiful. It feels like a phone call to another time, but also where we could be going in the future.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the sound of those records is just, for me, the actual sonic sound of them, the atmosphere, the kind of feeling, like Joe Cocker, but that with help from my friends, like that kind of world. And we're just trying to carry it on. I think as you say, it ended in like 73, you know, the whole commercialism of it all took over. And we're just trying to pick up where those guys left off and amalgamate the ingredients of all the, this is what I talk about quite a few times, you know, there's common factors in a lot of those records. There's like an ingredients list of all of those amazing records, the best record you can name sort of ever. And there's almost, there are comparable ingredients in all of those records. So it's like putting those ingredients into a pot and making more. That's how I see it. You know?
And it really does ride on, as you say, the feeling.
Yeah, it's atmosphere. Because it's,
when you put those records on, it does something to you.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It's got audio gold.
Well, there's another sound that one of your tunes remind me of, Miles and Miles, which is a bit more of a driving kind of twangy road song. It feels like a lost Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers track for me almost, you know, like something about that highway winding sound, which again, you should just come out to California, but I'm just saying. But people assume that Tom Petty was like part of that classic rock era. And really, he was making most of his stuff in the 80s and even early 90s, which were the big hits. But he got it, whatever that feeling was.
Yeah.
And stuff that he played even in like 93 or something with like Mary Jane's Last Dance, people are like, oh yeah, that's like a song from the 60s or 70s. Like that was literally made when like Nirvana was making grunge, you know? It just feels like it could exist for all time. You know, Miles and Miles, you talk about sort of people out on the road hitchhiking. Is there hitchhiking still happening in England? Is that even safe?
Not sure. The only time I did it, I got in the car with a bloke and I got in and he said, oh, nice to meet you. I've got loads of pictures of dead people in the boot. And it turned out he worked for the police and that's what he did. But that was quite scary.
Wrote that in back in an afternoon, didn't you? I just popped out to the shops, came back and he was like, oh, I've got this whole track. Everything's done. And immediately.
It's nice when that happens.
Oh yeah, that's what we want every time.
Yeah, but immediately it just felt like, and we were in our tiny little cramped flat in London, and you just immediately transported to, I mean, I've never road tripped in the US and I've always wanted to, but it it made me feel like I was, even though I don't know what that's like, you know. And that's kind of how you wrote it, didn't you?
Yeah, the imagination, the images of Vanishing Point or Bullet the film or Easy Rider, just that's what it looks like in my brain as I was doing it. Yeah.
Crazy is that, like, if I talk to my dad about, you know, the 70s when he was in college, he basically would say, well, yeah, we just hitchhiked from Chicago back to New York. It was just like, that's how we got home.
It's crazy.
Nuts. You just, like, got in some guy's truck and then he dropped you off in the middle of the night in the middle of nowhere and you figured it out, I guess.
I can't believe that it was that safe. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Or was it?
I don't know. Did people just not kind of think about safety as much? Like,
well, if you think about it, the reason why Uber, Lyft, all these things exist now is that is modern sort of sanctioned hitchhiking.
Yeah,
right. I like that.
It's like, yeah, I need to get to the airport. Some dude in that Toyota Corolla is going to show up. I'll give him $30 and yeah, I guess it's safe. I mean, people do get murdered in Ubers, but, you know, we've made that a part of our sort of everyday life again.
Oh, that's true. It just doesn't feel like it, does it? Because you do it all with your thumbs on your phone.
We were going home from our British tour early August, and we dropped off our van in East London somewhere and could not get an Uber to pick us up. Like, every time we got one booked, it would cancel.
Oh.
And then we're like, okay, well, what are we going to do? It's like an hour across town to the airport. We allowed plenty of time, but, like, not that much time. And then there was, like, this really janky, like, car service in the lot across from where we were. And we went in there, like, can you get us to the airport? And they're like, I don't know. How much money do you have? And we're like, oh, God. And then eventually some Ubers came and this guy drove me and a couple of us, and he wasn't listening to his GPS. I saw that he was taking various completely opposite direction turns, and I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, okay, we got a couple hours, but, like, where is he going? And he's like, oh, no, I know how to do this. And straight up, he, like, went down some road and all of a sudden there's a big crash and we're sitting there for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, not moving. And the other guys are already at the airport because their Ubers listen to the GPS.
Oh, my God. Did you make your flight?
And I'm like, wait a second. Are we going to miss this flight? You know, because it's really hard to get nonstops from London to LA. It was already really expensive. And it started to get pretty dicey, but we made it with, you know, some time to spare, thankfully. But, you know, that's what happens when you hitchhike across London.
You
know?
Yeah. You should never hitchhike across London. The roads are too windy. It's not like in America where it's all cut up, like, in a clever way. We're all like, oh, let's just turn this road into a triangle.
What is up with you guys in the roundabouts? Like, just too many roundabouts. My God,
fucking love a roundabout over here, particularly a mini roundabout. Yeah. Oh, mini roundabout. Anyway,
let's talk about Go Down River, which you know, this album's not very old. It's already been listened to over a million times, which is cool. Do you feel like a song like that, are you guys listening to a lot of gospel music? Is there certain things that you're referencing that feel kind of paying homage to a lot of black music, is what I'm saying? Like, what were you listening to when you were recording Go Down River?
A lot of stuff. I mean, we love the stacked harmonies. That is the sound in itself. Like Melanie, I don't know if you know Melanie, that song Lay Down, which is a huge gospel instrument, like over a sort of big 60s beat.
A lot of that sort of stuff for me comes from Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, to be honest, most of it, the way her and her backing singers sisters were stacking their harmonies and the kind of inflections that they were putting on those harmonies together,
right,
are just astounding.
Yeah, probably a bit of that and sort of like Crosby, Stills and Nash, you know, putting those two worlds together. You know, and the Stones, you know, there's a, always an underlying element of the Stones in everything we're doing.
Yeah, so, all of the gospel singing that they have on their stuff.
So they're, so that's a good, you know, a good example of putting the gospel singing over a kind of English, British, London 60s sound. Yeah. You know? So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know what we're listening to at that point. Probably...
the Duane Allman anthology.
Duane Allman stuff, LA Getaway. That's all got gospel stuff on it. So yeah, I think that's a, and Delaney and Bonnie, you know, that's all that's sort of gospel rock, I'd call it, you know.
Yeah.
Gospel folk country rock.
Yeah, and I think that was the first one that we really, was that the first one that I laid vocals down on, maybe?
Possibly.
Well, it was certainly the first one that we kind of went to town on stacking those harmonies.
I love it. There's like 30 layers of vocals on that.
Well, I think when background vocals become sort of next level, you know, it almost becomes the lead part.
Yeah.
Accidentally, you know, a lot of this stuff, like you said, Aretha Franklin, but even like the Ray Letts, you know, Ray Charles, and you know, when you're singing along to those songs, you're actually singing with the background vocals.
Yeah.
You know,
personally.
And you're not singing, you can't sing like Aretha Franklin most of the time, but you can sing like those folks, and it's so catchy, it's percussive, it's like, it's really the hook is the background vocals, not the lead. She's written almost riffing on them, like in that gospel style, you know.
And I know when we were starting to play these tracks live, and we were just the two of us doing it acoustically, I was always drawn to the highest harmony line. But obviously with just two voices, it's like, whoa, you can't do that. That sounds mental. So I'd always have to bring it back to the sort of, I don't know, the second highest, or kind of, I guess what you'd call like the female lead. But as you say, it was always the highest one that I'd want to go to.
But I think that theatrical harmony layering thing is a very, I don't want to say British rock and roll thing, but you think about Queen and, you know, Wings. It's like stuff that is unfettered from any sort of good taste. It's just like, let's just do all the harmonies. You know?
Fill the whole thing. Yeah, it's great.
Like, and, let's make it an opera and a rock and roll song.
Our new single is coming out soon. It's called Bohemian Rhapsody.
You're gonna love it.
You're gonna really love it. I was just thinking also in terms of like contemporary inspiration, Fleet Foxes is a massive one for that wall of sound and harmony layering,
which is kind of strange because they're emulating Crosby, Stills and Nash. So it's like it's just spinning.
What is your backgrounds, you know, from when you were kids? Like, did you start playing music really young, or is something that you guys took up later?
Yeah, I mean, I started guitar like really young, 8 or 9 or something. Just like my parents were just plowing me with Jimi Hendrix and Creedence and all of that music. So I just grown into that world. I mean, it's like, it was never gonna be anything else. Just always guitar music.
I was singing before I could talk, and played a bit of piano, had some guitar lessons, but mainly the thing I was drawn to was singing. And it just, I think I had my first singing lesson when I was about 8, and then it just kind of just went off on my own and probably destroyed my parents' ears for about 15 years whilst living with them. And now we're here. But I listened to this. We grew up on the same music because we were both raised by rock and rock and roll lovers, weren't we? Led Zeppelin, The Stones, you know, all of the greats. So from like a very early age, that was built into our psyche. Yeah. Were you the same?
Yeah, I mean, my dad is a big music collector fan. He was at Watkins Glen, which was actually the biggest music gathering maybe ever for a long time.
Really?
It was like bigger than Woodstock. It was the Allman Brothers, the Grateful Dead, the band, just like this ridiculous, you know, confluence. I always saw the ticket stub he had like in his office. It was like $5, all the greatest bands you've ever heard of, you know.
That's insane. They didn't know what they were living with, did they? Didn't know how good they had it.
Well, the thing is, like, when I ask him, like, well, why didn't you go see, like, Janis Joplin or, you know, like, Jimi Hendrix or some of these folks when they were alive, or, like, Queen, you know? And he's like, well, because you kind of just assumed they'd be around, you know? Like, they were just another awesome band in this list of great bands. And then all of a sudden, tragedy happens, and they're gone, you know? I think the difference is that the people now, if they skyrocket to stardom, the accessibility is not really the same, right? Now, people are lucky in that if they discover you on this show or now, they could go see you at Collectivo Coffee in Milwaukee. Yeah, we've played several times. They have very nice plants, like overhanging the stage.
Aww.
Milwaukee, very underrated. Jump in Lake Michigan for me. But the hope, obviously, is that you could, you know, become some worldwide sensation. But this time when people are just discovering you is a really special time, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think people feel like they were in on the ground floor, you know? Yeah. You know the band First Aid Kit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Swedish sisters. I saw them in LA 12 years ago for 10 people at the Echo.
Wow.
There's a YouTube video, I think it's still up, of them playing Ghost Town, like one of my favorite songs. I was just like, me in front of the stage, just like them singing like at me, you know, because they were just like this new band. I found their first record at a shop in Portland when I was, you know, up there. And then there they were, you know, and now they're playing like the Hollywood Bowl, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, wow.
When you play these songs live, do you have to try to recreate that big wall of sound vocally? I mean, you can't really. Like, how do you do that live?
We're trying. It's something we're experimenting with at the moment. Yeah, because obviously it's a bit of a nightmare on stage to have that kind of sound. But yeah, we're getting there. We are certainly making strides. But it's, you know, we have four-part harmonies, so four of the band sing, so it is a big sound anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, to get that real wall of sound is, we're getting there. I think there's a few things we need to do to make it work live.
Yeah, yeah. We are lucky though that, as you say, the two of the other band members sing and recreate those harmonies with us, and it's nice because we all lock in, and so it's there.
Right.
It's not there as much as we want it to be.
Yeah. Give it some more beans. The beans are coming. We're going to make it bigger. It's cool. But you know, if you saw us now, it's still a massive sound. But there's, you know, I want it to go even further.
Yeah.
You know,
like, is there a vocal pedal or something that you could use that brings in that spring reverb special spice? Is that even a thing that you can do?
It's funny you say that. I've been looking into that today, but the answer is no. In real terms, yeah, it's I think it's funny because the sound is really the accumulation of many voices, so that's part of it. So trying to recreate that is a thing, you know, like Phil Spector, you know, the way that Phil Spector would record, you know, just layer and layer and layer and layer on the same thing. That's part of why it sounds like that. So yeah, it's good. Either that, or we just need 10 more people in the band.
Yeah.
Do you record at all on tape, or is it recreated via Pro Tools magic?
There's a bit of both going on, that's what I'd say,
because there's something about the way that the layering of those tape recordings, like, degraded, you know, like where it becomes almost distorted. You know, I mean, the Mamas and the Papas stuff, you could feel it almost like pressing against the celluloid, like it can't hold Mama Cass's voice in there somehow, you know?
But that was actually the first thing that happened when we first started working together on retro stuff. Will was in another band, and he asked if I could try a vocal out as a backing vocal. Mm. And there was something about the way my voice hit the mic, or I don't know, how would you describe it?
Yeah, it was like really high level was hitting the tube on the microphone. So it was like, I don't know what it is technically, but the fact it was a tube mic and that level, it just made it sing and saturate in such a nice way that you don't get with other mics, you know, as to tube mics.
So that kind of planted the seed of, whoa.
It was like Give Me Shelter,
Mary Clayton
vibes. Instantly, I was like, whoa. And then picked it up 2 years later, and here we are, you know.
If you could take your musical time machine back and go on a tour with any band in history, who would it be? God.
I think for me, it's got to be the Stones. It's just got to be.
Which album? Which album, Stones?
Ooh.
Beggar's Banquet. Okay, moving on.
Exile, maybe.
Exile or Goat's Head Soup.
Yeah, Goat's Head Soup. Goat's Head Soup doesn't get the recognition it deserves.
I want to be there when they play Star Star live.
Yeah, chaos.
What about you?
Oh, it's a big one. I really like the Joe Cocker one where he's got a huge band around him, the Grease band. I think that's
Mad Dogs and Englishmen.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. That is such a fantastic record. Just the power of it, I think. All those guys, you know, Grateful Dead, all of that would be amazing to watch and see them do it. All of that. Yeah, I couldn't really choose it. I could go on all night. You've got me lost there.
Look, we've toured with my band Dust Bowl Revival probably 30 states, but like there's parts of this country that we've never gone to, we probably never will, you know. Yeah. It's like it's really difficult to figure out a way to route certain tours through like Arkansas.
Sure. Yeah.
Or like, you know, like that area between like Ohio, Kentucky, Missouri, you know. It's like these big areas where you're just like, okay, there's no major cities.
Yeah.
A lot of the folks around here do not vote like me or probably want to hear my music, but sometimes you got to go to these small towns because they're so excited that you're actually going to bring something crazy and new, you know. That's why going to like these small towns in England where we just went, like Shoreham by the Sea. And we went to a town called Snape.
Snape?
Snape.
Oh my God. Is that where Snape came from, do you think?
And it's just like you're basically on a wetland bog or something with this beautiful old concert hall that was made for the mill workers there or something. And people were pumped, you know. They're like, okay, they're playing California funk and blues, and okay.
They're ready for it. They want that flavor.
You know, I think what's hard is when you've been a band for over 10 years, like I have with my group, is that you gain this crop of people who are super excited by what you're putting out 6-7 years ago. And then eventually, you know, they move on. And then they maybe rediscover you again, you know. But you have to kind of like keep winning people over. And in our case, like our sound changes whenever we feel like it type thing. You know, it's like we were more of a sort of bluegrass and Western swing and speakeasy jazz kind of mashup. Mm. And then it was like more of a blues funk rock and roll with like a folk underpinning. And now it's like, I don't even know what it is anymore. It's like, it's just music, you know, it's just,
cool.
But it's roots so music. Beautiful. It's just like, it, you know, it energizes you, I think. is.
Well, you just got to write music that comes from your soul. It's like you've. Yeah.
That's kind of all you can do, right?
Yeah, get it out.
When you have a new song, Will, like, what is the protocol? Are you writing it down in a notebook? Are you putting it in your voice memos? Like, how is it sort of unfurling?
I set up the computer and headphones on, 12-string guitar, loads of reverb, and just put it down. That's all I do. I really just sit there. Whenever I get an hour, I'll just see how many songs I can write in an hour, and then I go and work on them for the next two or three months. It's a funny one. I just set up and I just there's no real method to what I do. I just sit there and do it. It just sort of just appears. I've never been able to pinpoint ways to make it easier or better. I've been catching up with the songs I've written for the last sort of 5 years. I like the whole thing, you know, you sit in bed and you hear these songs coming to you. Like, fuck, right, get out of bed and go and set up all the computer and start doing it all. I quite often do that. I'm trying to do that more and trying to actually manufacture these situations where I can fall asleep right next to all my gear that's already on and ready set up. So I can try and fall asleep, then write the song, and then go and just record it straight away. Because that's how I do it. I literally just plug it in and just sing it and then start putting it together.
It would be cool if the song All My Dreams was fully composed in your sleep and you just did it like without actually moving from your bed.
It would be good.
And you woke up and it was already done.
Yeah, that'd be ideal. Yeah. Yeah, we'll mix and everything. Yeah, it'd be great.
Maybe that's the story we should start peddling that one was written.
We might tell people that's how it
is. Yeah. It's funny when you sing that line, dreaming of a place where the sun light never sleeps. I can feel that dark English fog.
Yes.
Like you like peering towards California, like, God, it would be really nice to
just
come on vacation right now.
Well, that's it. I would say a lot of it is from the viewpoint of looking to California. You know, the whole sleeping on grassy ground, you know, that is primarily about, you know, dreams. You know, I'm tired of my dreams. You know, it's kind of this whole lifestyle and this whole utopian LA lifestyle which I perceive, which I've never ever actually been to actually witness. And that's the whole thing is I'm tired of my dreams. I'm tired of actually thinking about it. I want to go and do it. So that it's funny how it's all actually working through song, because it's coming full circle. Yeah, but so a lot of that EP is written about dreaming of California. As much as, you know, much as anything else, I think. Yeah, and some of the new songs, that is actually one of the lyrics, one of the new songs.
Yeah.
Dreaming of California, and it's cool.
I think it's...
I've heard it's very hot, though, so I'm...
I would avoid right now. We're in a historic heat wave where it's been like 105 here for like four straight days.
All that. So what's that? Because 82 is 28, roughly. So
yeah, it's like
in the high 30s for us. Would that be high 30s?
It's too hot is what it is.
Yeah, it's way, way too hot. I'd like to be like to Canada or something and then go down to LA in the summer, just like kind of.
No, it'll pass soon. But the basically they're saying like you have to like try to turn off a lot of your electronics between 4 and 9 or they're going to have blackouts. Like people are using so much power because it's so hot.
I guess like everyone's turning their aircon full blast when it gets like that, so it just makes this terrible cycle.
We're lucky in that we live, you know, about 20 blocks from the beach, and it's, you know, honestly 20 degrees cooler here than Hollywood or the east side downtown.
For real?
But we had like rehearsal in like downtown LA a couple days ago. And this rehearsal space had air conditioning blasting full tilt, and we were covered in sweat. Like it just didn't matter. Like the sun was just beating down on this roof, and the air conditioning couldn't keep up. It was like 106 degrees, you know.
I'm not sure.
That's crazy.
Maybe I have to reconsider all this.
California dreaming. No, but like the beach is so beautiful. Like it's just, you know, the thing that blows my mind is that a lot of folks I know, you know, can't afford to live closer to the beach. So they just don't ever come down to the beach, which is the greatest part about living here, right? You have this massive, free, gorgeous ocean right here. And people are like, yeah, I go to the beach maybe once or twice a year. You know, you're like,
that's crazy, isn't it?
It's right there. Just literally park your car and jump in the water. It feels amazing. Yeah. You know, there was dolphins jumping over the waves by us a couple of days ago. I mean, it's just like paradise. And they're like, well, I can't drive 45 minutes down there. It's just too much. yeah. It's like, okay, well, you know, sweat your butt off in Silver Lake.
That sounds amazing. I didn't realize that you had stuff like dolphins as well.
Oh my God. It's like they were literally playing in the waves, like right, like 10 feet away from us. It was crazy. As the sun was setting.
Well, I'm sold. I'll just have to deal with it.
Are you playing a show in LA or not?
We are doing the Troubadour.
Oh, when is that?
You'll have to check.
I had this in my head a second ago.
Yeah, we're playing the Troubadour.
That is the spot.
That's the spot. Have you played there?
That is sort of like our home base. Yeah, we recorded our live record there. With Valley Queen. I know they're good friends of ours.
Oh, cool.
Cool, man.
Yeah, we're excited.
Natalie's great.
We love their stuff.
That's a sort of fairly major pilgrimage for us to do that gig, I think. Yeah.
That's probably the most religious moment for us on the tour.
Yeah, right next to Laurel Canyon as well. So.
I can escort you to the beach if you really need to, you know.
Oh, sweetie. I'd love to see those dolphins.
It's funny. There was a band from Nashville that I knew that was playing in town, and they were like, can you help us go to the beach? I was like, follow my car.
I really want to do that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to be in San Francisco the day after, so.
Surely a quick dip.
The good thing is that the Troubadour is actually almost west side. It's about as west as many of the good venues go. Mm-hmm. It's basically Beverly Hills is where the Troubadour is. Mm-hmm. So it's, 20-minute jaunt straight down Santa Monica Boulevard, the end of Route 66.
Oh, fantastic. Just got shivers. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I think we've got to make a quick jaunt for a dip in the sea, haven't we?
I'll give you my email. Nice. I'm just going to change my profession to beach ambassador.
Yes, yeah, man.
That's cool. That'd be good on a t-shirt, that beach ambassador.
Here's the $1 parking on Ocean Park. Here's the good Japanese rice ball joint by the beach. Here's the Caribbean place. And then we're just going to jump in.
That's perfect. I think you do really well.
All right. What would be your dream for this band like 5 years from now?
We want to play big stages.
Yeah, I mean, I think, is it not the same as every other band's dream?
Yeah, I guess. I think making some pretty iconic recordings is sort of obviously where I'm at. I'd like to make stuff that's iconic and timeless. I want to make some recordings that are really the next level, that stand up with the greatest records of all time. That's, you know, been my goal since about 15. So I think in 5 years we have some access to studios and time and some players, we can really, really make some amazing special music.
I think then being at the point of having the success to be able to emulate what is on the record fully live with the, you know, if we had a saxophonist on the record, have them with us, you know, choir.
We would need about 5 guitarists even to do the EP properly. So, you know, to have the full big live show and play all around the world and Glastonbury and all the things.
All the biggies.
Yeah.
What has been your biggest sort of rock star moment so far in this young life of this band? Has there been a moment where you're like, we're really doing it?
Oh,
I think for me it was two maybe. CBS was amazing because we had just come from doing France Inter live show, and we got the phone call from our manager saying you're coming to New York on Friday, and we were like, oh my God, how amazing!
Yes,
we've just come from Paris and now we're going to New York. and being in that studio. And then at the weekend, we played End of the Road Festival and we opened the main stage. And I think that was a really amazing moment because it's huge and, you know, people are coming down. They may not necessarily even know who we are, but they want to go see who's on the main stage. And it really packed out and everyone was dancing. It's like, yeah, this is happening. And then the Pixies closed that night. And I thought, that's so cool. We opened and Pixies closed. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you just say we opened for the Pixies on your press release. You know, that's what we did. We opened for the Pixies.
What about you?
Yeah, that was, I mean, honestly, being able to play the Cambridge Folk Fest main stage at like, you know, 7 o'clock at night. I mean, it was like, it was a great slot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think with bands that tour around in the festival circuit like we do, especially in America, I think you can honestly get held back a lot because people like you, but you're not like famous or like have a hit or blah, blah, blah yet.
Yeah.
And so you're like, yeah, you played like the 3 o'clock slot or the side stage slot, which sometimes can be even more fun because it's more packed and rowdy. But in Europe, every now and again, I feel like we've gotten more of a chance to be given the main stage primetime slot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's an amazing festival, which you guys should play one day called Tuna Fest in Denmark.
Okay.
It looks like Tonderfest, but apparently it's pronounced Tuna.
That's really good. I really like that, the way you did that.
And we did it a couple times and they're like, okay, you're on, you know, main stage in front of 9,000 people at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Canadian festivals do that too, where they're a little more democratic about who gets to really play in front of the most people. Cause they'll be like, okay, you random funk band from California, followed by Inuit throat singers, followed by Wilco, you know?
Wow.
It's like very diverse. And you know, I think you guys would fit in a lot of these great festivals we have here. And I think what's tough right now is that because there's so many great outdoor things with people still being a little skittish about going into clubs for the COVID stuff, especially in the summer months right now, it's really hard to sell tickets at clubs.
Right.
You know, like I know a lot of bands bigger than us that are they just canceled certain runs of their shows. It's like it's not happening. Like people are just not used to either going back into the clubs for a one-off on a Tuesday night. The Troubadour, I think, is a special place because people want to go there anyway.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's not the most fun feeling when your manager or booking agent's like, so how do we get anyone to show up at some of these midweek shows and Ohio, yeah. You know, and you're like, well, I don't know. But at some point, you're just like, you know what? The 20 people that'll come, or the 200 people that'll come, they're gonna have a little magical night for themselves.
Yeah,
the same, right? You go out, you do the same show.
Yeah.
Did you guys work some terrible day jobs that you are glad that you're not doing anymore?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was living in London from graduating from drama school. So I did every terrible job you can imagine under the sun. Nannying, flyering, waitressing, invigilating. I mean, just everything awful.
Invigilating?
Vigilating, yes.
What is that?
Very, very serious. I would make sure people were not cheating on their test papers. Thank you very much.
Wow. School. That's a word I haven't heard.
Invigilating.
That's a good word.
Yes, 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 yes. The clever people use it. yeah, so that's going to be great. I mean, well, I don't do that stuff anymore. Our lives changed kind of drastically during the pandemic. We left London and came back to Brighton. And but you've done AV tech stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, putting very, you know, people pay me to put bloody wires underneath floors in courtrooms, which is hilarious because I have absolutely no idea what any of that, how to do any of it, but I just had to do it. So, I put 64 Cat 6 cables underneath the floor. Okay, but Google, what's Cat 6 cable? Anyway, I worked some horrible things. I used to work in a wholesale plant nursery, so they'd be selling flowers for supermarkets, but there'd be like 2 million of the same
plant
to pick them up and put them onto trailers for about 9 hours every day. And that was shocking, but character building, so you know, it's all good.
Well, I'm really glad that folks are going to be able to hear your stuff here in the States soon. I definitely am going to try to go to that Troubadour show.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, man, that's great.
And, you know, we'll all jump in the Pacific Ocean together. It'll be great.
I can't wait to swim with the dolphins.
What a vision.
It's going to be amazing. There better be dolphins or I'm going to give you a bad review.
I don't really control the dolphins, but...
but that's the way you've sold it, so...
You know, I think if you come near sunset, which will be, you know, maybe after your sound check, could be good timing.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Beautiful.
Cool. Nice.
We can't wait.
All right, guys. We'll keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Man. Great to talk to you, man.
Thanks for having us.
Go. Big thanks to Will and Georgie of The Heavy Heavy for getting on the line with me from Brighton in the UK. Their website is theheavyheavy.com, and they're going to be playing coming up in London in the Netherlands, and yes, right here in Los Angeles, March 21st at the Lodge Room. Definitely going to have to make it out for that. And a band in LA that reminds me of these guys a bit is the Eagle Rock Gospel Singers. People who have really obsessed over creating a sound that is both timeless and harkens back to this special age of roots music, funk music, folk music coming together. And they're going to be playing with my band Dust Bowl Revival at Pappy and Harriet's in Pioneertown, Joshua Tree, December 16th. Please don't miss that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then on the Sunday, December 18th, Dust Bowl Revival will be finishing off the year at home here in LA at the Venice West, playing some holiday songs, some brand new songs, and some favorites. We're going to be really looking forward to seeing you there with the amazing Ray Zaragoza. If you want to hear bands like The Heavy Heavy, you might enjoy my new radio show on the SoCal Sound 88.5 FM here in LA. Saturday mornings, our new time at 7 a.m. I've definitely spun The Heavy Heavy on there, and we did an all-lady show last week, and this show coming up on Saturday is going to be all bands from around the world, no American bands. Sorry. I was amazed at the response a post I put up on Dust Bowl Revival's Facebook got, just saying how it's been a bit of a struggle this last year or so for independent bands, or as I like to say, unfamous bands, to just sell tickets at local club shows, theaters, concert series that aren't big festivals. It's really tricky to convince people to go see live music on a nightly basis, on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday. But I'll tell you right now, if you don't support cool touring bands that are coming to your community, if you don't go to those shows, A, they probably won't come back, and B, they may not be able to survive as a band much longer. Live music, shows, merch, it's how we get on making a living as music creators, songwriters, band leaders, etc. And this show is my way to really share the experience of what is going on behind the scenes with some of your favorite unknown songwriters and bands. If you like what you hear on the show, do me a favor, share it with a friend, and leave us a kind review on the iTunes page. It really helps people find us. And as always, the show on the road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, and we are a part of the BGS Podcast Network. Stay safe, and we'll see you on the trail with more episodes coming up.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians, talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.